As an adoptive parent, Mike Berry is on a mission.
I want people to know that there will be hardships. That doesn't mean that you, if you feel called, that you shouldn't do it, but you need to go in with eyes wide open with this. So you need community, you need education. You cannot have one without the other. If you're fully educated but you have no support, you're going to struggle more than you would if not. If you have all support and no education, then you're kind of walking blindly. So you need both of those things.
This is Family Life Today. Our hosts are Dave and Ann Wilson. I'm Bob Lapine. We'll talk today about things every prospective adoptive parent ought to know before you adopt so that you're going in eyes wide open. We think adoption is a good thing. We'll just talk about how to be ready for it today. Stay with us. And welcome to Family Life Today. Thanks for joining us. You have to have noticed this. I've been staring at the pretty impressive tat that our guest has got. Have you noticed the tattoo there?
No, I want to talk about it. There it is.
Yeah.
I noticed it.
So Mike,
and I noticed your wristband.
So Mike Berry joins us again on Family Life Today. Mike, welcome.
Thank you.
And
good to be here.
That's quite a tattoo. How long you had that tattoo?
I've had this since July of this past year, and it's actually unfinished. It's not. Ooh, there's still
fresh.
More to do.
It's
with
a
this.
New tattoo.
It's a new tattoo. Okay. And I'm going to – my wife, she rolls her eyes every time I say this, but I'm like, this was – excruciating. And all I'm thinking when he started to do this work, because this is it's going to have little leaves on it that have initials of all my kids.
So it's a tree.
It's
we've
a tree
got
of
the
life.
Roots.
Yeah.
Okay, all right.
It's a tree of life. And so
it's on your forearm.
Yes. And I'm telling you, at one point, I felt like he was cutting into my arm, like cutting into flesh the whole time. And I kept looking over at it. But it was one of those interesting things where you don't get used to the pain. You just accept it because you know that it's going to create something that you want to have. So that was kind of how I accepted it. But man, it was I had tears.
Really?
It was like the most uncool tattoo experience. My wife's like, you can't tell people that. Because she has a couple of tattoos too. She's like, you can't tell people that because it just, I'm like, I don't care. It hurt. I don't care if you're not supposed to say that.
Did your parents approve of that tattoo? Did they?
My dad
is in his
70s.
No,
I don't. I'm 42, and I showed it. My dad pushed my sleeve up, and he says to my mom, he's like, do you see this? Look at this. And I'm like, and now I'm going to get in my car and go back to the house that I paid
to
for.
My house.
Well, that tattoo is a little bit like raising children.
Yeah.
Like, it's beautiful, and it's going to have this great outcome,
painful.
But it can be so painful in the process.
Yeah.
The bracelet, is there a connection to the wristband? Excuse me, I shouldn't call it a bracelet.
So, the bracelet is, I went with my daughter's choir to Tlaxcala, Mexico this past, the day after Thanksgiving, at 3 o'clock in the morning, after I had Thanksgiving dinner. Not cool.
You're a good
dad. Not cool, yeah.
Dad.
Yeah, well, that's... Yes, we'll go with that. So, and I was a volunteer for the trip, which was really interesting because it was the first time I volunteered for a youth event after Youth Ministry Day. So that was kind of a weird turn of things. Like, somebody else is in charge.
Yeah.
I just get to take orders. It was kind of cool. So I bought this on the streets of Tlaxcala, and it's handmade. It's lizard skin.
Wow.
And I watched the guy hand make it.
That's pretty cool.
So you're going to give it to me as a gift.
I will.
Is that what you're doing?
I will let you touch the leather, the leopard skin.
When are you getting the tattoo finished?
Well, you know, I think maybe this summer. But here's the thing: you have to know about me. I have to work up to things that involve needles.
No way.
Not kidding. Yeah, I have to be in the most peaceful Zen state of my life to have blood drawn. It's
and
pathetic.
And yet, you're
I know.
The adoptive parent of
I know.
Eight kids.
Yeah.
Eight
with
kids
multiple
with trauma
special needs.
Yes.
In the background.
And I'm such
background.
A wimp on so many levels. Yes.
physically
speaking.
Mike has written a book called Confessions of an Adoptive Parent, Hope and Help from the Trenches of Foster Care and Adoption. Eight kids, all of them with trauma in their background?
We have four children who have been diagnosed with alcohol-related neurodevelopmental disorder, which is under the umbrella of fetal alcohol spectrum disorder.
Wow.
And that's really the pinnacle of special needs. You know, everybody, all of our children deal with loss in some way, shape, or form, but those four really have the major needs.
Was that purposeful? Did you know that they had that coming in?
So we were fostered to adopt, and we did know some of the background. And realistically, and this is something that we've learned through research and now we train families on, the reality with adoption foster care oftentimes, especially when you're fostering to adopt, alcohol is a very inexpensive item to purchase. You can almost kind of assume that if there were other things going on that not always, but you know, if there were other uses, that alcohol was probably a factor as well, just because it's so easily accessible. So we did know with some of our kids that there was a potential for drug and alcohol exposure in utero. And we received official diagnosis from – there's clinics all around the nation that will give official diagnosis for fetal alcohol spectrum disorder, alcohol-related neurodevelopmental disorder, because it is a recognized disorder.
And just to put a bow on this, the reason that you underwent the agonizing pain, the flesh – piercing pain of having a – is that an oak tree? Do we even know what kind of tree it is?
I don't know.
But it takes up all of your forearm. This is no small tattoo.
No, it's – yeah, it does. And it was painful.
The reason you did this as a 42-year-old man who ought to know better is,
it's true.
Is what?
My wife has – across the middle of her back has every one of our initials, like the beginning of our name. So starting with me, going all the way through our child, just the first initial, which is really funny when she, in the summer, you always see people standing behind her and they're like, they're trying to make a word out of it, you know, and they're like, is that like, you know, they're trying to make a word out of it.
Did she whine about getting her tattoo like you did?
No, absolutely not.
I bet she didn't.
She is so strong on so many levels, and I am not, and I fully admit it. But I wanted to do something similar. At some point, and here's the other thing that's super uncool about me, is that I have been talking about doing this since like 2011, and in 2018 I finally did it. So everybody out there that knows me, that's listening right now, is like, yeah, that's typical Mike. Mm-hmm. He talks, never going to do it. So I decided I want to do something different. So I thought I was going to do that up my forum, just the cursive initials of all of our family. But then I realized a couple of things. I added grandchildren to the mix. Mm-hmm. So 3 grandchildren, 8 kids, 3 grandkids. And I thought, I want to do something a little different. So I decided I'm going to do like a tree of life and add the names in. And at some point, I want to add Micah 6:8, do justly, love mercy, walk humbly at some point. But I had to go through round 1, and that's it for now. So I got to work myself up to round 2. So,
Mike, if you were sitting down today with a mm-hmm. couple who are on the front end of this, and you said mm-hmm. you're foster to adopt, that's how you handled all 8 of your adoptions? You fostered them first?
6 out of the 8. So our first adoption was a private adoption, and then our last adoption was a private adoption. So they were the bookends. So the middle 6.
And you fostered kids that you did not adopt, I presume.
Yep.
So if you're sitting down with somebody and they're saying, we've been thinking about it, maybe the Lord's leading us to this adoption, and we wonder if that's it, and they said, just give us your pep talk or your discouragement talk or whatever kind of talk it is, what do we need to know? What are the questions we should be asking to know whether we can endure what you've gone through.
Yeah. You know, it goes back to that list you read earlier. I would say to them that you need education and you need community. The reason I put that list in the book is because I want people to know that there will be hardships. That doesn't mean that you, if you feel called, that you shouldn't do it, but you need to go in with eyes wide open with this. So you need community, you need education. Those two hold hands together. You cannot have one without the other. If you're fully educated but you have no support, you're going to struggle more than you would if not. If you have all support and no education, then you're kind of walking blindly. So you need both of those things. So that's what I would say to them.
Which is harder to get, education or community?
It used to be education, but that's changing. Organizations like my company, which is Confessions of an Adoptive Parent, we specialize in providing virtual support for foster adoptive parents through resources, through training, through parent-to-parent support. So it's changing. You know, you have organizations like ours, like Christian Alliance for Orphans, and all these different organizations that are now rising up and saying, you know what, for so long, there has been a lack of education. So they're coming alongside families and saying, not only are we going to help you learn about trauma and how trauma changes the brain, but we're also going to walk with you and support you. It's changing.
How do people find those organizations? Do they just Google help for fostering or community?
Yeah, you can do that. You know, state by state, there are resources. We always tell people immediately, you could do a Google search. You are going to find lots and lots of results. So you have to kind of weed through that and know what you're looking for. We have certain partnerships that we have, organizations that we state openly, like we stand by these organizations and these are great places to work with. But I think that one of the first places to start is just by looking at your local foster care agency. Most places, not all, most places are going to do a decent job of saying, okay, hey, we have a support group. We have training sessions that meet monthly. A lot of places are doing that now, you know, so.
You know, you talk about education and community.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder about perseverance. I'm wondering how many times you've wanted to quit or felt like you couldn't. I mean, I'm sure community helped there, but I mean, you know, I've never adopted. Mm-hmm. Our middle son is fostering and adopting, and it's interesting. Our third son just cried as a baby all night, wake up, cry. And it's sort of funny now, but one time, and I'm thinking, you know, special needs kids. I'm just saying this because you're multiply my situation times 100. But I literally, one time, Cody was a little baby crying, would not stop crying. I literally thought it was spiritual. Mm-hmm. So I walk over to the chair he's sitting in as a baby, and I cast out a demon.
Well, he thought that's what he was doing.
I thought I was. I was like, in the name of Jesus. Yeah. I go, this has to be spiritual nature. There's no way. And I'm thinking, that's nothing compared to you. We found out later. I'm going to blame my wife. We found out later that he was allergic to apple juice.
Yeah,
so basically we were poisoning him, and that's why he cried. But I'm thinking of the sleepless nights, the police visits.
Yeah.
Daughters getting pregnant. I mean, all these things you've walked through. How did you not quit?
I think Jesus becomes real, realer than he is, that I believe he is already, when flesh and blood human beings step into the mess with us and wrap their arms around us. I think that's Jesus in flesh here on earth. I think that by all means, I'm a person of faith, and I believe that Jesus is real, and he's held on to us through the darkest storms. But even this morning, before I came over here, I got a text from my best friend, and this is a member of my tribe. This is the person that I lean on, right? He was checking on me because this last week, we had a rough week, a very dark week, where my recent travels, I've never felt loneliness on travels like I have recently. Just like this, I just feel lonely right now. I feel empty. And in that emptiness, I sent a message to my two close friends, John being one of them, who texted me this morning, and I just said, here's what I'm going through. I need you to pray for me. And that's all I could get out. And he has just repeatedly sent me texts and saying, hey, how are you doing? And, you know, that's when Jesus takes on flesh, as far as I'm concerned. That's when he becomes more real. That's when in Psalm 34, I think it's 34:18, where it says the Lord is close to the brokenhearted. You know, that's when the Lord becomes real. That verse takes on like flesh and blood because somebody on the other side of a phone sends a text that says, I've got you. Like, I'm holding you up. Kristen, I wish you were here to tell this story where she talks about Aaron and her holding up Moses' arms. If you guys could see this video of her teaching this lesson, there's a room of like 1,500 foster and adoptive parents who are holding each other's arms up as she prays this prayer. And she tells the story of the battle. And again, I'm terrible with this. I'm trying to remember all the references, but it's where the Israelites are locked in a vicious battle and Moses is growing tired and his arms start to fall and the Israelites start to lose. And so Aaron and Hur recognize that and they go over and they put their arm, they hold his arms up and the Israelites move on to victory. And she tells that story because Kristen and I have people in our corner that hold us up. And the reason she told that story is she has these two close friends, or they're two couples that we know who live all over the U.S., like 2,200 miles away from us. And when we were going through something, you know, the police situation, the dealing with the law, and it's interesting because when your hometown police officers call you by name, you're like, yeah, you've been to my house a couple of times, right? So we're dealing with all that. My son's going back to residential treatment. Kristen sends out this desperate text to Andrea and Krista, who live on the West Coast, saying, listen, we don't know how we're going to get through this. Just pray for us. Krista texts back and says, we will be your Aaron and Hur. Mm-hmm. It's going to get me emotional, but that's what they were. They held us. They held up our arms, and that's what we need. It is not all pretty and glamorous often. I mean, we say, hey, I'll pray for you, but then it's like, yeah, but man, if you're going to enter into that battle, stand there while the battle's raging and hold someone's arms up. That's what gets us through. That's when God becomes the realest of the real to us.
So as you talk about that, I'm thinking faith, that is huge.
Oh, yeah.
So as you're walking into this and people are considering, should I do this? Should I foster? Should I adopt? You've named a few things. Go in that list of what are the things you think this is what you need as you walk into this journey.
Yeah. Well, I've already spoken about the two. You know, support is huge. And I will be honest here and say this, that you, when we talk about support, especially if you're connected to a church community, you're going to have lots of people that are like high-fiving you. They're like the high-five crowd, like, we're your cheerleaders. You know, we've got you. And I always tell people, be cautious of the people who think you're a hero for doing this. It's almost like they're divided from you like by a glass wall. It's almost like you're looking through this glass wall, and then when everything falls apart, you know, and you're parenting a kiddo from a really hard place, those people tend to be the first to turn tail. You want the people that are not impressed by what you're doing, who don't think that you're a superhero, but understand why you're doing it, who won't judge you, who will be your Aaron and Hur, who will hold you up. Our best friends, John and Nicole and Ryan and Megan, two couples that we just do, I shy away from this term, but I will say it, we do life together.
And how did you find them?
Well, when I moved to Indiana, I became a youth pastor and they were youth leaders. And what's interesting is that one of my first things that I did as a youth pastor at that church is I like changed all the programming and made a lot of people mad. And John and Nicole stuck through that with me. But they became close friends with us and they have been through the fire with us. Nicole was actually at our house one time when one of my children completely flipped out, melted down, picked up one of those big patio pavers that's like this big, you know, like 2x2, big, I don't know how he got, I can't even lift those things up. Picked it up to throw it at my wife. And she's 5'3", 120 pounds. She's petite. She's small. He goes to chuck this at my wife and Nicole steps in the way and the brick hits her in the knee and she ends up in the ER. And she still loved us and she still loves my kid. Those are the people you want in your corner. I don't want to freak anybody out by these stories, but I will be honest and say this is, we're talking about kiddos from tough places. So
I talked to a friend who faced a situation with an adopted child where they looked and said, we're going to have to put this child out of our family, out of our home for the safety of our kids and other kids in the neighborhood. One of the hardest choices they've ever had to make because they loved the child and because they had assumed responsibility. And now a couple years in, they're going, we don't know how to handle this and how to control this. Have you ever had situations with kids where you've thought, we can't continue to be their parents?
I don't think we've ever been to the point where we thought we cannot do this. We have been to the point where we recognize that we cannot keep this child safe. And that's when residential treatment came into the picture. We've known people that have had to relinquish. And we have some good friends who specialize in helping parents who have had to relinquish. That's their ministry. That's their outreach. But we've never quite been to that place, that point. We've had some really dark moments. Back to that list that you listed, Dave, in the book is, you know, that's all real. And that's a small slice of it, you know.
Oh, right.
But, you know, I mean, that's a reality for several people. Mm-hmm. And that's hard because you feel like a failure, you know, and you beat yourself up and you feel like, what did I do wrong? And, you know, there are plenty of stories out there that are not good stories where people entered into the foster care adoption journey, maybe for selfish reasons, and that's a whole other topic. But we're talking about kids who have gone through chronic trauma to the point that it has left them with an inability to function at times, you know? And sometimes parents are up against a wall and they have to protect other kids. Their backs against the wall.
Yeah. But I've sat with parents, I said, do you recognize, do you know that where your kids are today as a result of what you've done as an adoptive parent is so much better than where they would have been if you'd not stepped into their lives. You may look at it and go, these kids are still way messed up. You know, the fact that they're still alive is probably because of you. The fact that they're not in juvie is probably because of you. Or maybe they've been to juvie, but the fact that they're not up on a felony. So you do have to sit down and go, we've made deposits here that have improved the lives of these kids, even though we look and go, this is not what we dreamed up for these kids. But by God's grace, they're in a better place than they would have been if we hadn't gotten involved.
So, Mike, what are your hopes?
It is much in the same that a biological parent would have, and that is Kristen often says it like this, that we're not raising children, we're raising adults. So for us, our structure that's in our home and our boundaries and the consequences that we have when boundaries are crossed, they're all pointing towards this end goal of, I want to raise children who respect themselves, respect others, and have character and have integrity. Mm. You know, that's for us what it's all about. Our kiddos have come from places that have caused behaviors to happen. We call them trauma-induced behaviors because it's a result of trauma. So some of the situations we've dealt with have not been their fault, you know. But we will look at our kids and say, I still believe in you. I still believe you have hope and a future. You know, my son who has spent more time in an institution than in my house because he could not make choices that were safe for him or anybody else, I still look at him and I say, I believe in you. You have hope and you have a future. And that's in spite of some really, really dark stuff. You know, I think that you just, no matter what, I will tell parents this, you've got to believe in your kids, even through the hard stuff. And you cannot think that anybody's a hopeless cause, even through some big, big failures. Everybody it has hope, you know, no matter what mistakes they make, no matter what sin has happened, there's hope for everybody. And that's because grace changes everything.
And it's in some ways a confirmation. You know, I'm still stuck on Psalm 34:18 that you mentioned earlier. God saying, I'm near the brokenhearted. Mm-hmm. I save those who are crushed in spirit. And that's definitely an adopted parent, but that's every parent.
Yeah.
That's every person that needs to be reminded he's here.
Well, I was saying the same thing. It's really no different with biological kids or adopted or foster care children. We're looking at them the way God looks at them and seeing the things that God put in them. And he always sees hope. He always sees redemption. Mm-hmm. And that's what we're trying to pull out of our kids. And that's what you're saying. I still believe in you. I see you.
Yeah.
So important.
Well, and you may have started this whole journey with aspirations of being a superhero. You and your wife are heroes.
You are.
Oh, I appreciate that. Thank you.
You and your wife have intervened directly in the lives of 8 human beings whose lives are immeasurably better because of the sacrifices you've made and the pain you've endured and what you have borne for them. Jesus said, greater love has no man than this, that he lays down his life for his friends. You've laid down your lives for your kids and demonstrated amazing love to them. And we appreciate you coming in and offering insight and counsel and helping us understand that, yes, there's a glory in adoption. It's a rugged glory. It's a hard path. I hope listeners who are thinking about adoption or listeners who are in it, in foster care, in adoption, and you've hit the wall, get a copy of Mike's book. Find out more about his ministry. Go online to our website at familylifetoday.com. We've got links there. You can order the book, Confessions of an Adoptive Parent, Hope and Help from the Trenches of Foster Care and Adoption. Again, order online at familylifetoday.com. Or if it's easier, call us at 1-800-FL-TODAY. Again, the website is familylifetoday.com. Or call to order the book, 1-800-358-6329. That's 1-800 F as in family, L as in life, and then the word today. You know, I keep reflecting on the idea that it takes a community, it takes a village to raise children, and for adoptive parents to try to do that on your own without a support structure, without a community around you. That's a recipe for failure, for disaster. And David Robbins, the president of Family Life, is here with us. We can't do this journey on our own, can we?
We're not intended to. That's certainly not the way God designed it. One thing Mike said today just kind of echoes in my mind, and I'm really pondering on, is he said, be cautious of the people who think you're a hero when we're going through something hard or taking on something God's inviting us into. When things get hard, those people tend to be the first to leave. And really what God's doing in my heart right now is putting up a mirror for me to reflect and go, what are the ways that I'm actually avoiding some people in my life and backing away slowly of some people who are in pain that God actually wants me to journey in deeper with them? Whether that's busyness or convenience that's keeping me away from it. I'm just a little convicted today, and perhaps you are too, of who around me needs me to be an Aaron and a her in this season? Who's someone experiencing suffering or a trial in this season? How can I serve them? What do I need to do to just go be present with them amongst the pain? And who is God inviting me to point to Him through Christ and by the Holy Spirit? He is the ultimate Aaron and Hur. Mm-hmm. And how can I help point people to Him amongst their pain? I want to be a person that bears each other's burdens. And I think in parts of my life, I have been. I've been a real friend that bears burdens well. I think today I'm pretty convicted, and some people are coming up in my life that I think I need to go be with them, and I need to carry burdens with them.
I'm thinking of something Paul Tripp said years ago. He said, God made us to live upward and outward, and too often we spend our lives looking inward. Yeah. And it's a good reminder. We need to be looking out and saying, Lord, who do you want me to interact with today?
Yeah. And on the other side, if you're someone who's going, but I'm the one hurting, I'm the one drowning and suffocating, I think it's healthy for us to declare need. Sometimes we get isolated and we need to ask for help. And it's okay to ask for help.
Yeah, that's good. Thank you, David. Now, just before we wrap up today, we are so grateful for the listeners we have already heard from during the month of May. We're about halfway through the month. Many of you have already heard about the matching gift opportunity that was made available to us this month, an opportunity to match every donation we receive up to a total of $550,000. Many of you have responded. We've got some new legacy partners who have joined us. Thank you for becoming monthly supporters of Family Life Today. Got a little bit of an update today. We've actually had an increase in the amount of matching funds that are being made available. In fact, an additional $95,000 has been added to that matching gift fund. So we're now at a total of $645,000. Every donation you make is going to be matched dollar for dollar until that fund is depleted. And if you become a legacy partner today, every time you make a donation over the next 12 months, your donations will be matched until, again, the funds are gone. So we're hoping Family Life Today listeners will either make a one-time donation or become a new monthly legacy partner. And if you decide to become a legacy partner, we want to send you a thank you gift. It's a gift card so that either you or someone you know can attend a Weekend to Remember Marriage getaway. The registration is our gift to you as a way of saying thank you for becoming a legacy partner. You can sign up online at familylifetoday.com or call 1-800-FL-TODAY. Again, either to make a one-time gift or to become a new monthly legacy partner. We'll send out the gift card to legacy partners as soon as we hear from you and you make your first gift. Again, go online at familylifetoday.com or call 1-800-FL-TODAY and help us take full advantage of this matching gift opportunity. And we hope you can join us again tomorrow. We're going to talk about what has become an epidemic in our culture. It's the whole issue of sexual sin, sexual brokenness, pornography, and other forms of sexual sin. Jay Stringer is going to join us to talk about some landmark research that's been done to help get to the root of all of this. And we'll talk with him tomorrow. Hope you can join us for that. I want to thank our engineer today, Keith Lynch, along with our entire broadcast production team. On behalf of our hosts, Dave and Ann Wilson, I'm Bob Lapine. We will see you back tomorrow for another edition of Family Life Today. Family Life Today is a production of Family Life of Little Rock, Arkansas, a Crew ministry. Help for today. Hope for tomorrow.